research that resonates.
Schweitzer has not been wrong on any of his years and years of reporting on the Bidens.
Investigations that matter.
If your last name wasn't Biden, do you think you would have been asked to be on the board of Burisma?
I don't know. Probably not. But that's, you know, I don't think that there's a lot of things that would have happened in my life that that if my last name wasn't Biden.
The only entities, the only people that would report on this, and Peter Schweitzer, who deserves a Medal of Freedom, in my view.
This is The Drill Down with Peter Schweitzer.
Hi, this is Peter Schweitzer, and welcome to The Drill Down, where we relentlessly expose cronyism, corruption, and the abuse of power in Washington, D.C. The co-host is always Eric Eggers. How are you?
I'm excellent, Peter. We're talking about one of my favorite things.
Which is not showing up.
Absolutely. Absenteeism in school, it's a massive problem. It used to be a big deal. I remember one time I had to go to the principal's office and like beg to not get an F because I'd missed four classes in one semester. And it turns out that's actually like at the top of the class these days if you're only missing four classes in one semester.
It is. And we're talking about a really widespread phenomenon. Now, recently we had the solar eclipse, mm-hmm. right? And there were a lot of schools that closed for people to go see the solar eclipse. And you can say, okay, that's perhaps not a bad idea. But the problem is it's a lot more widespread than that. And it's affecting large numbers of people.
Yeah, I think we've seen like a paradigm shift in terms of what we expect school to be. And I think it's happened since COVID. I know our guest with Moms for Liberty has been documenting just how much has changed, the efforts behind those efforts to change. But like, to me, it wasn't as much shocking as that, you know, thousands of schools closed to see the eclipse. It was that a majority of Americans were in favor of it. They said, yeah. And so what I think it speaks to is school, as the New York Times pointed out in a recent study that showed just how much absenteeism has exploded in schools. It went from 15% to 26% of students are now chronically absent. And it's worse in the underperforming communities. And we've talked before about how the pandemic has exacerbated learning gains. It's been really bad for American schools.
You could say the absenteeism has eclipsed other problems.
I wouldn't say that because I respect myself and the audience, but no, for sure. But you could say that.
Well, let's bring on somebody who actually has expertise in this area, is outspoken on it, Tiffany Justice. She is with Moms for Liberty, one of the senior people there. Tiffany, thanks so much for joining us. Tell us a little bit about what you feel is going on with the absenteeism. Is this just young people deciding not to show up for school, or is this a larger systemic problem that we're facing?
Kids just believed us when a nation showed them that school wasn't that important, that them showing up and being in class was kind of a negotiable thing, right? Depending on the adult wants instead of kids' needs. And I know you guys at the Government Accountability Institute are very focused on unions. And we all got to see the cozy relationship that the Biden administration has with the teachers' unions. And I think Americans, Peter, they got an inside look. Tina and I like to say they got a peek behind the education curtain and saw exactly who's running schools. And so, yeah, I'm not surprised that kids don't think school is that important because a nation of adults told them it wasn't.
Yeah, and that's really what happened during COVID, right? They said that they had all these hyped concerns initially, and then, of course, it became pretty apparent that those hyped concerns were unwarranted, but they continued to have schools closed. So your point is that this is learned behavior, as it were, from from young kids. They were told by their parents school attendance is not that important. It's kind of optional. And now we're seeing the byproduct of that kind of policy. It seems to me the other part of this, though, frankly, and I know there are some great teachers out there. My wife is a teacher, for example. Your wife teaches at the college level. So a lot of great teachers out there. But frankly, for a lot of teachers, having 25, 26% of students on average absent at any point in time kind of makes their job easier. I mean, in other words, if you're a bad teacher or a teacher doesn't really care, you're kind of not incentivized to bring up this issue because it means you have fewer students to worry about.
Yeah, but the lift is so heavy to get students back on track when they've missed that much school. But the truth is this. I mean, here we're talking about chronic absenteeism, 20%. I think it's 35% in New York City if children are chronically absent. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, we took years of these kids' schools. I mean, you know, there were kids who should have been gone to kindergarten or first grade in San Francisco who went right to second grade. So, you know, the truth of the matter is that kids come in to school normally just behind, right? They don't know their alphabet. They don't know how to spell their name or hold a pencil. And the lift is heavy to bring all of the students up to what we would call kindergarten ready. And so every year that a child misses or every day that a child misses in school is just, you know, really harder for them, obviously, to catch up. And then the teachers have, you know, an almost impossible task of trying to, you know, gain a year, 2 years, and 1 year.
Yeah. And actually, to Peter's point, I think that there is an element to, you know, it makes it easier if you have fewer students to teach. But in their analysis of the absenteeism and the toll it takes on the educational outcomes, and I know, Ms. Justice, you pointed out that like only 33% of fourth graders are reading on grade level. That's a post-pandemic fact. It's not like we were crushing it beforehand. And I'd like to talk more about what that looks like in terms of the learning gains that were lost and the factors that went into the school closures being as long as they were. But the New York Times points out that actually when you have this rotating cast of classmates who are gone, it actually makes teachers slow down. It makes their job harder because they're like, okay, were you here this week? You missed that assignment. So the mentality that school is optional negatively impacts everybody that's in the classroom, regardless of how often you show up, partly because it actually makes the job of the teachers more challenging. But that's maybe speaks to a difference between the reality the teachers face in the classroom versus the union leadership and the policies they support.
That's right.
What do you see happening now in terms of the union leaders? We've previously documented how teachers unions about two decades ago stopped becoming focused on education. They started becoming focused on politics. It's an election year, and I don't imagine that trend's going to change anytime soon.
No, and I think we've seen very clearly that teachers' unions care about adults' wants and not kids' needs. And from my own personal experience sitting at a bargaining table, the people at the bargaining table bargain for themselves, not the teachers in the classroom. It's been my experience that many of the teachers in the classroom, and in fact, I think that teachers broadly in America have no idea that the unions spend more on political activism, often in service of things that they do not care about. You know, you're seeing over half of teachers identifying as conservative, and yet 99% of the contributions that unions make, go to Democrats. So, if unions really cared about teachers, they would be concerned about the rising discipline issues and violence that we're seeing in schools, and they would be addressing that. They would be addressing, a lot of the different issues that teachers and concerns that teachers have about how the children are not improving academically. But that's not what we see. What we see when we look at their summer meetings and it is a lot of talk about abortion, about Ukraine, about funding for, equity, diversity and inclusion, and not a lot of talk about kids. So maybe the unions have a place or did advocating for teachers' rights and fair workplace conditions. But the gig is up. Nobody believes that they're putting kids first. And it's time that we start being honest about that.
So let's talk a little bit about that in terms of the teachers' unions and what can be done. Let's say you are a teacher in a public school. You're taking your job seriously. You care about students. You care about education. And there are lots of those. But you're a member of the NEA. Mm-hmm. You kind of are opted in automatically without your knowledge. What kind of options exist, Tiffany, for people who are teachers, who are in that environment, that don't share the agenda of the NEA? Do they have opportunities to opt out? What are some of the other things that they can do to fight the controls that the unions have that are clearly causing so many of these problems?
I think speaking out first and foremost, knowing that you're not alone. I'll be honest, I have seen the pressure that the unions put on individual members to stay in line and conform to what it is the union wants. But I think we're seeing, again, every day more violence in schools, teachers feeling alone, concerned about school safety, both from the outside and inside the school. And so I think teachers need to start having their voices heard. If they are thinking it, they are not the only one in that faculty lounge that is thinking that things are not good. What we've seen certain states do that we need to replicate are things like Governor Ron DeSantis has done, making it that, you know, the teachers' unions have to have a certain threshold of membership in order to be able to continue. And then also stopping the districts from automatically removing the dues from teachers' checks. I know that sounds like a very simple thing, but you know what? When you are getting a check and it's your salary and your hard-earned money and you see that total amount, and then you need to go stroke a check to a union for dues, our hope hope is that teachers are going to stop for a second and say, what are my union dues going to? And your study, it was called From Academics to Activists, Teachers Unions Reimagine Spending Priorities, clearly showed that, you know, the unions are not using this money for relationship building or for advocating for the teachers, but they are using it to change the culture and the future of our country.
There's no doubt. And I think that just to reiterate, and you guys have pointed out the fact that the Randy Weingarten and the head of the unions were able to work with the Biden administration's CDC in terms of rewriting the rules for when schools would reopen. And as a result, schools stayed closed for longer. There wasn't an emphasis on learning. We've lost two decades worth of learning gains. The NAEP report showed that. So, and as a result, now you've got a 25% of that's been made up in math, 33% of it's been made up in reading. But we still are at massive deficiencies. So we have a real problem in terms of academic performance that I think you can directly tie to the union's political orientation as opposed to being focused on education. But you've now mentioned school violence a couple of times, Tiffany, and I'm just curious because, you know, luckily my children are in elementary school, we don't have a violence issue, but I am wondering if maybe the violence that we see in schools might actually help contribute to some of the absenteeism. If you're a parent and you're concerned about your child's safety, do you want to send your kid to a school where that? What are you seeing in terms of violence? Just give our audience who maybe doesn't have school age children or all they see is the occasional viral video. When you talk about violence, what do you mean? How bad is it? And what are teachers, what should they be able to do that maybe they can't?
Americans are not seeing a fraction of the violence that is going on inside of these public schools. And there have been practices like restorative justice that have been put into place. You know, Obama's dear colleague letter saying that they don't want to see, you know, disparities in discipline. So if you're a school and you have a certain segment of the student population that is committing a lot of different, you know, issues in the school, what you've been told now is that you can't report those things, that you need to take a different steps in order to handle that. And that's called restorative justice. If you remember the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School, the gentleman was a part of something called the Promise Program there. That was a restorative justice program. And what this does is not hold kids accountable for their behavior. There are no real consequences for behavior at school. Abigail Schreier just came out with a book, Bad Therapy, Why the Kids Aren't Growing Up, where she goes into detail about the fact that in the sake of, I think she says, emotional well-being and empathy, we have ended up harming a generation of children and really glorifying some of this horrible behavior. Teachers' hands have been tied. They are not able to discipline in the classroom. The students do not have respect for them in the classroom. And that's because if they go to the principal's office, they're sent right back. And so we have some real issues when it comes to discipline in our schools. We need to give teachers back the authority in the classroom to hold students accountable for their behavior. And until we do that, we're going to continue to see violence on our campuses. Unfortunately, it's really concerning.
So we have teachers union bosses that are not being held into account, right? We have some teachers and administrators that are not being held into account. We have, as you just talked about, violent students who are not being held into account. What do you say, Tiffany, to a parent who just says, you know what, just forget about it. I don't care about the public schools anymore. I'm going to put my kids in private school. Or what do you say to the person who doesn't have kids, who's listening to this podcast, that says, I don't care anymore. I just let it rot. I certainly don't view that. I think public education is key. A lot of people can't afford private schools. A lot of people don't have a good private school near where they live. What do you say those to who believe we should just give up on public education, that it's not worth fighting for anymore?
My first message is to the parents. If you can get your kids out right now, if you have the ability to homeschool or you can get them into another option, my advice to you is to do that. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to be the one standing at the door of a burning schoolhouse telling you to sacrifice your child. However, the vast majority of kids go to public schools in America and will continue to. I've served as a school board member. I've seen beautiful relationships being built in schools of support and connection between teachers and students together in schools. And I do think that there are a lot of redeeming qualities to public education, although they need to be handled at the state level and not the federal level. Part of the issue of why we have the teachers union so incredibly involved and influencing what is happening on the ground is because the Federal Department of Education has given them such entrance into our schools and such power in what happens there. But, you know, to the rest of the people, maybe you don't have kids and you're thinking about why you should care about this issue. Our nation is declining. And our children are being taught to hate each other and our country in school. And there is no future for America. Kids deserve to learn to read, to write, and to do math. And there's no reason spending over $840 billion in education that is not happening. So the time is now to take a stand. I'll make it very real for you. Do you want to be able to drive over a bridge safely? Do you want to be able to go to the doctor? Would you like to be able to go to get your prescription at Walgreens at 9 p.m. at night? There's a direct correlation between children not learning how to read in school and rise in violent crime in your communities, as well as the economic impact that has on your community. So lots of reasons to care, including the fact that kids just deserve to have their full potential unfolded in school.
No, it's a great point. I actually have a question for you, because I have a friend who was the teacher of the year at their local middle school, and they recently left the profession. There's a variety of reasons for that to happen. But there's people who I think are more liberal in terms of their political orientation, and they think what's happened in schools in Florida and other states where there's more conservative governance, it's been an intentional effort to undermine public schools because of what they perceive to be this kind of like partnership with charter school companies or things like that. Yet what you're describing actually sounds to me like it's more what's happening in schools, and the reason why parents are rejecting public schools is not because of an intentional effort to undermine it. It's because actually the opposite. I think liberal policies have created an atmosphere in which it seems unattractive. But I guess what would you say to people that think, yeah, this is, if public schools are bad now, it's because conservatives wanted to make them bad and they've passed these policies to do so?
Yeah, I don't think conservatives have wanted to make public schools bad. I think that they've been looking for other options because they were concerned they wouldn't be able to make the reform happen in the public schools they wanted to. I'm not going to lie, it's a heavy lift. I, however, do believe that we need to reclaim and reform our public schools. It's a captured institution. Without doing that, within a generation, we will lose our country. There is absolutely no doubt. We can fix the issues at the border. We can work on our economy and foreign policy. But if our nation is crumbling from within, we lose. So I would say if there's any criticism of conservatives in the past, it's that we have kind of ceded the ground of education to the left, and it's time for us to reengage in a very real way. And you're seeing amazing leaders at the state level. States are very energized to reengage in education in a real and meaningful way. And so, you know, dismantling the federal Department of Education, giving the power and the money back down to the states where it belongs, and then trusting that we get the right people elected at the school board level and at the state level to make good policy and to move states forward, like Arkansas has with Sarah Sanders, like Ellen Weaver in South Carolina is doing with their state, like Governor DeSantis and Kim Reynolds have in theirs.
Yeah, a lot of great local reforms. And by the way, I think the best recruiter for charter schools is Randy Weingarten. If I was running a charter school, I would be putting up posters with quotes from Randy Weingarten. That's what's driving people out of public education. But you touched on something that I think is so important, Tiffany, and that is the beauty of our federal system is that still it's at the local level that so many education decisions are made. Yes, you have the federal government trying to exert more control, trying to take more of the mantle, but this is by and large a state and local issue. So the opportunity to actually reform and change the way our schools are operated is within our grasp. You know, people that are local activists who are, you know, concerned about the situation in the Middle East, it's kind of hard to influence the State Department and the Pentagon as a local activist, although you should try.
Unless you're talking about Ukraine at your local school board meeting with the unions.
Right, exactly. Right. But the point is, in this case, you actually can. So tell us just a little bit about, if you could, your story. I mean, you talked about some of the experiences you've had and the roles that you've played at the local level. I'm assuming this isn't something you necessarily thought you were going to do, but you jumped in with both feet because you saw it as necessary, but give us a sense of what your experience was and in a way that maybe will let somebody listening here say, hey, I need to do what Tiffany's been doing.
Yeah. So I'm a mom of four kids. My kids now range from the ages of 19 down to 12. And in 2015, I got involved. I was volunteering at my kids' school. Tina Deskovich, the other co-founder of Moms for Liberty, has a similar story, volunteering at her child's school. And the more we got involved, the more questions we asked. And sometimes there weren't very good answers to those questions that were given. And so we engaged a little bit more and a little bit more. And then we both ran for school board. We didn't know each other. We weren't friends, but had a very similar experience where we saw a government system that was shutting parents out Parents are the number one driver of student success. We should be rolling out the red carpet for parents in public schools. And yet what we saw, especially during COVID, was mics being shut off time and time again. So we got involved at that most local level, asking questions, re-engaging in our school district, and decided to run for school board. What people don't always understand is the fact that your school board sets the trajectory in your community in many ways. Often they're the largest employer in your school district, in your community. That has a lot of impact, especially in rural communities. And a lot of times, the most amount of money that's being spent in your county is on education. And so, following those tax dollars and making sure that people are held accountable for the money being spent well is very important. Tina will laugh and joke. We'll say, there was always so much media at the county commission meeting, and here we were on school board making huge decisions for the community, and nobody was really paying attention. I say this to say, I had no idea that I was going to run for office. In fact, I just really wasn't a very political person up until 2016. But I think what we're seeing right now is Americans reengaging in at the most local level, realizing that while they were very busy, having babies and building companies and saving for college and all of the things that we're supposed to do, that we forgot to get involved in our civic processes. That was something somebody else did. Well, the time is now for people to stand up like you, like me, and to serve in local office, because we change America one backyard at a time. And, it's the reason why Moms for Liberty only endorses in school board races. We really feel like that's where we need our best and brightest in America to re-engage, to reclaim and reform public education.
Well, I applaud what you've done. I have four children, also aged 10 to 6, and I'm honestly too exhausted to mess with them at all. So, I applaud you and your efforts. It's more like, hey guys, here's Netflix, but no, or Pureflix, because we actually do have some moral standards in our family. But we do appreciate very much like what you've done. It's a big deal, and I think what you've the public school system literally will impact everything from the people who are building bridges we drive over to the people who defend this country and the military and the people that do everything. They're all coming through schools, maybe less so than they were, but the public school system matters. It's the biggest story. I used to work in local media also, Tiffany, and we used to cover the school board meetings and nobody would be there. And it'd be sitting there handing out hundreds of millions of dollars with stuff, talking about real things. And I do think COVID, and to the extent that it was a blessing because people realized just how much schools matter. And people are engaged. And I think we've seen a resurgence of engagement. And I appreciate that groups like yours are a reason why. So thank you for doing that. And thank you for hanging out with us today, because I do think this is the next thing. Like, school matters. So you should go to school. Yeah. And you have to support policies to suggest you got to get there, because we have suffered a grievous wound to our national intellect and capacity. And it's got to get better. And it's only going to get better if you're in school.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, our guest has been Tiffany Justice, one of the co-founders of Mom for Liberty. Tiffany, if somebody is interested in supporting your organization or becoming involved, how should they reach out?
Please go to momsforliberty.org and check us out. There's a big map. You can click on the map, click on your state, see if we have a chapter in your county. If we don't, click to start one. Everyone has a role to play in saving our country. And Peter and Eric, thank you so much for having me on your show. The work that you do is incredibly important. Keep digging and showing the union for what they are, and I'll keep trying to let America know about it.
That's a deal. Our guest today has been Tiffany Justice, one of the co-founders of Moms for Liberty, a great organization. I would encourage anybody who has children or is concerned about the future of our country and children, get in touch with Moms for Liberty. I know a lot of people have reached out. They welcome volunteers. They welcome alliances and opportunities to make change. And we appreciate you, the audience, as always, listening to this podcast. We know that your time is valuable. You can find out more about the research we do at thedrilldown.com. And of course, you can find this podcast wherever fine podcasts are located. So thanks again for listening. Until next time.